Welcome to the Fuller Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording, and it is 1:16 p.m. that is Pacific Standard Time. Today is February 3rd, and let's kick off with what's going on in China. The H-share index was up a little in here today. There's a short-term oversold condition, but obviously there are still a lot of uncertainties regarding the outbreak of the coronavirus in Wuhan. Now, there is obviously a lot of obfuscation going on about all the different facts. For example, if a hospital doesn't have enough of testing kits for the coronavirus, then they can't give an accurate description of how many official cases there are. That is something that is contributing to the fears that the number of official cases is far in excess of the official figures. And of course, you can't come up with an accurate mortality rate unless you've got accurate figures on the infection rate and then the number of deaths. So anyone who is stating a mortality rate for the coronavirus is obviously not in command of all the facts, because without an accurate number of people who've actually got the disease or the virus, then you can't possibly come up with an accurate estimate. So I've seen some Chinese reporters cite a mortality rate of upwards of 5.5. Then the one that seems to be circulating most often in Western media is somewhere around 2. Just for context, the SARS epidemic was somewhere around 10%. And the common flu or the seasonal flu is about 0.1. So even if the mortality rate is 2, it is 20 times larger than the mortality rate for the seasonal flu, and upwards of anywhere between 250 to 600,000 people die a year from the seasonal flu. Well, if you start multiplying up based upon a global pandemic, then you start to come up with some pretty scary numbers. And obviously, that is well understood by policymakers. This is, I think, by far the most important point. It's increasingly being priced in. And what's happening now in terms of the Chinese response is they have, on the one hand, added $22 billion in terms of support. Then they have relaxed the rules on asset management, which is a euphemism for the shadow banking sector. And they've been trying to curtail the shadow banking sector for most of the last 2.5, nearly 3 years. So that suggests that that's over. They are going to prioritize building of infrastructure projects, which will put a lot of people back to work. So when we start to add all of these things up, what it represents is a clear stimulus from China. Now, when we look at what happened in copper prices today, I think we get some information. We had a really quite impressive rally right off the open last night, but it gave up the majority of that advance by the end of today. Copper has fallen for more consecutive days than it has at any point in its trading history. So there is no question that we have a short-term oversold condition, and we're right in the region of a previous area of support. If there's support going to come through, then this is where it should start to happen. If we see a breakdown from here, then that is going to potentially represent a bet by international investors that Chinese growth is going to take an additional hit. They've already decided, or they've already estimated, that growth is going to contract by about 2% in the first quarter, but will recover in the second quarter. That might be a bit ambitious, but what it also suggests is that the monetary and fiscal response to this crisis is going to be profound. It's, I think, quite likely to rival the size of the stimulus that was imposed in the aftermath of the credit crisis. it is worth, I think, reminding ourselves that the size of the stimulus that China introduced following the credit crisis rescued the global economy from a depression. China wasn't the epicenter of risk, but they moved very aggressively to shore up their domestic economic growth. This time, China is the epicenter of risk. One of the most important points here is that the tightening that they've been going through for the last few years has resulted in much lower growth than they've had historically. And it is a lot harder to grow at 6 and 7 and 8% when your economy is large relative to when it is small, just because of the base effect. Then when we look at the oil price, it's estimated that China is now importing 3 million barrels a day less than it was before this crisis broke. The Brent crude price has now broken downwards from its year-long range. And this is a big question here. We have a short-term oversold condition. How much supply is OPEC willing to take out of circulation? There is also the question of exactly what's going to happen in terms of high yield spreads. This continues to look like an uptrend, and the spread was quiet in here today. But I think the more important point is, since the advent of unconventional oil and gas, spreads have tended to stay wide, and they have got a clear upward trajectory over the course of the last year. The lower prices go, and most particularly when we also look at the natural gas price, there's the clear potential here that it is going to cause bankruptcies. There are going to be some of the most highly leveraged energy companies that are going to run into difficulty because of low prices and because of the unavailability of hedging opportunities. The backwardation that we have in the oil price is a real challenge for the majority of that's really very different to what we've had previously. What this is now telling us is that the massive decline we've had over the last couple of days has completely changed the backwardation. In fact, I hadn't looked at this before I started recording the broadcast, but this had been trending the other direction. Now, when we look at the potential here, the very clear response is that a lot of these over-indebted companies are in a lot of trouble, and some of them are going to go bankrupt. That's going to contain supply, which will then reduce the imbalance and create the conditions for an additional rally. Some of the cashed-up private equity firms that are looking for trouble in the energy sector will probably swoop in and take the most attractive assets and then start funding drilling, which will allow them to gain a profitability advantage because of the low cost basis that they're buying assets at, but they're also going to contribute to the cyclicality of the market. We don't yet have a low in the energy market, but the lower energy prices go, the less of a tax on consumption that energy represents. And I think it's rather important because one of the missing ingredients from the argument that we were in a period of synchronized global monetary and fiscal stimulus was the fact that China was not stimulating. Now they are, and the size of that stimulus is likely to be large. Against that background, energy prices and commodity prices are low, so that removes an additional headwind to growth. Obviously, we are still in an environment where this coronavirus represents a challenge, and the range of potential possibilities and the number of conspiracy theories and interpretations of, I think, incomplete data sets is proliferating right now because of the way that the Chinese government is not giving an accurate representation of what is going on. The clear conclusion from markets is that it is going to represent an additional massive source of additional liquidity. So the Nasdaq was in positive territory today. But what I thought was also particularly interesting was that some of China's bigger companies have rallied, and the Baidu, for example, has bounced from the region of the trend mean and it has broken its downtrend. JD.com has also continued to extend its advance, and Alibaba has also steadied in here. Well, this is steadying action from the biggest Chinese companies. But then I think it's we can't simply ignore the fact that Tesla was up $129 in here today. And that's an incredible acceleration against the background of a price chart which has been already accelerating. We often see the biggest advance at the top, and this acceleration is profound, considering that the 200-day moving average is just below $300, and the price right now is just south of $800. This is an absolutely incredible advance, and what it suggests is we are rapidly pricing in the most benign of all possible scenarios. There is a massive short covering rally going on right now. When we look at the short interest as a percentage of the float, there's still 17.5% of shares that are lent out. That's still a very large number. So that is what we're seeing in here right now. There is certainly some of the shorts are capitulating, and that is contributing to this massive price appreciation. When we eventually get the end of the short covering, well, it's not as if the amount of money that Tesla has made is making is about to triple, quadruple in the space of a couple of weeks, but that is what the price is starting to impute based upon this massive acceleration. Acceleration is a trend ending. It may not be the ending, but it is an ending. And the faster that we see the price appreciate, the closer we are to the next significant period of volatility. And it's not as if Tesla is not going to be investing in additional new plant and machinery. They're trying to break ground on a new factory in Berlin. They're probably going to then also be looking at additional manufacturing facilities. One of the more positive points today, though, was that Panasonic did say that they have now started to make a profit from the California, or excuse me, it's the Nevada plant, the Gigafactory. So Panasonic has broken the downtrend over the course of the last 2 years. We're certainly getting some accelerating trends, and that is clearly betting that we're going to get continued liquidity. In Europe today, Jens Wiedmann did say that he's willing to consider the potential for a different measure of or a different way of looking at the ECB's target for inflation. There is therefore the potential that Europe will also be looking at a way of attempting to increase its assistance to the market. When we look at what's going on, for example, in Germany, it's worth considering that Germany is more exposed to what goes on in China than other developed markets, and The index there pulled back rather sharply last week, and it is now right at the region of the lower side of its range. The MIB index in Italy is also right in the region of its peaks over the course of the last 5 years. That's almost exactly the same as the Euro Stoxx index. It posted a large downside weekly key reversal last week. It has not followed through so far this week, but we're only one day in. I think there is still the most likely scenario is that we are in a process of mean reversion, and the S&P 500 has at least steadied following the pop on the significant decline that we had last week. If it holds the 3200 point level, that would be the best of all possible scenarios. But I think there is still uncertainty here. There is the whole willingness of central banks to provide liquidity is something that will have a medium-term bullish impact, but we still have the uncertainty in the short term. So that does suggest that we are in for some additional ranging, but that the massive sources of additional liquidity are likely to propel asset prices over the medium term. I think when we then think about what does that mean for the gold price? Well, gold was in negative territory in here today. It has not been able to push through the $1,600 area, but it is still holding the $1,550 area. And that continued potential for the purchasing power of fiat currencies to be flogged in response to the willingness of central banks to continue to print is likely to continue to be a medium-term support for gold prices. I think what is really very interesting right now is the Dow gold ratio. I've been watching this ratio for a decade, and I think now is a really interesting time because it's right now at an area where if the uptrend is going to remain intact, it really should be holding the low put in the third quarter of 2019. We've had a really very impressive move in the ratio over the course of the last decade, and it's gone from a little over 5 to about 20. So that's a massive outperformance by the Dow Jones, but it's nothing compared to the kind of performance we had from the Dow in the secular bull market between 1980 and 1999. Well, there are two ways of thinking about this. The first is that we are likely to see the stock market advance. That was certainly what we should be anticipating based upon the historical precedent. So there, we definitely have the history to suggest that stocks should outperform relative to gold. But this is a meaningful pullback. We haven't seen these kinds of consolidations. We didn't see them really in the last cycle, except in the early phases of that cycle. We definitely saw these kinds of pullbacks in the 1950s and the early 1960s. And potentially that is what we are looking at now, that we're going to have periods where gold does outperform and can outperform for a couple of years at a time. And then equities will pick up again. There is obviously still the secular bull market environment here. We are very obviously prone to thinking about liquidity because the markets respond to liquidity. But that liquidity has also helped to fund this massive increase in technological innovation and investment in new projects. Whether that is in the pure technology field, in consumer electronics, in communication technology like 5G, or in healthcare, the pace of advance is rapidly increasing. So that is not going to be derailed, but at the same time, the availability of liquidity has also created a bubbly environment in terms of private equity, and some of those companies are eventually going to go bust simply because they just do not have the potential to cover their costs, regardless of how much liquidity is out there. But as long as that liquidity is flowing, then it is going to aid in their ability to persist. So even though Uber is probably a long way from being able to cover its costs, the share price is recovering. And when we then think about, for example, Beyond Meat, it was also one of the most overvalued companies at its peak last year, and it is beginning to demonstrate some support coming through in here. So that does suggest that the kinds of companies that can benefit from abundant liquidity, and of course Tesla is one of those, continue to do well. Obviously, this kind of acceleration that we're getting in some of these shares is a trend ending. It means that the good news is rapidly being priced in, and it is inevitably going to represent a peak when it eventually does turn. Obviously, so many people have been bearish about Tesla that the closing out of those short positions is lending fuel to the share. When that process is done, those shorts might eventually be right. We just don't have the evidence of that yet. Now, when we then think about where are we in terms of the wider cycle? Well, we know that there are challenges, but the dollar continues to be firm, and it completely unwound the decline we put in last week. It's right in the region of the trend mean. If it can continue to hold this area, then the fears that I think the potential where we're going to see a massive decline in the dollar will remain contained. That is also, I think, helping to support the bond market. Treasury yields were higher in early trading but gave up most of the advance. I think what this is suggesting is that we're most likely to see additional ranging on Wall Street. But I think there is also, it's worth highlighting that one of the more important charts out there is this one. It gives us the spread between the yield on the 10-year and the yield on the S&P 500. And when that yield is below, or that spread is below zero, you can get a better yield by investing in the S&P than you can from treasuries. And the meaningful times when it's been below zero were back in 2008, in the period between 2011 and 12, and in 2015-16, and all of these occasions were times when the market bottomed. And we had it again last year, and it is contracting again now. Well, this does suggest that the pullback we're seeing and the period of consolidation on Wall Street is likely to be a consolidation, not a top. And I think that's one of the more important points. Bull markets thrive on liquidity, and there's plenty of that. And central banks are responsible for killing bull markets, and they are providing as much liquidity as they possibly can. They're doing everything they can to sustain the bull market. So yes, there are definitely extraordinary valuations starting to evolve here, but until central banks, in fact, start to pull back on that liquidity, the likelihood is that we're going to continue to see additional upside, and this valuation argument that because yields are so low that investors have little choice but to invest in equities, I think remains one of the more powerful arguments for the bull market hypothesis generally. Of course, all of this could change if we see that the S&P 500 is sustaining a move below the trend mean if it breaks its sequence of higher reaction lows, but most particularly if it sustains a move below the 200-week moving average or the 1,000-day moving average, then that would be a very clear inconsistency. For the moment, the pullback has only been in the order of about 3%, and that's really very mild relative to the potential for even a mean reversion. And I think with that, I will leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.